This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Sustainability. It's a word many have come to associate with ecology and the environment. But what do you make of the term sustainable personality or even individual sustainability? A Virginia researcher uses such terminology to describe the kind of change he believes necessary to save Earth's environment. As you may have guessed, he's talking about you and me changing the very nature of our personalities. And even before that, getting a much more accurate handle on just what our personalities are. So, how do we do this? That's just one of the questions we'll have for James Madison University's Environment, Psychology, and Systems Management theorist, Eric Pappas. And you may have a few questions, too. But first, the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. Could changes in your individual behavior and personality make the world a better place? If so, what would those changes need to be? And is there a best way to go about making them? Our guest is a faculty member in the Department of Integrated Science and Technology at James Madison University. He's co-developer of the online personal assessment tool called PersonalityPad and author of an article in the Journal of Sustainability Education titled Radical Premises in Sustainability Reform. Doctor of Education, Eric Pappas. Welcome to the Insight Studios.
Hi, Tom. Happy to be here.
Well, Eric, what does my personality have to do with the world's environment?
I guess it has to do with where you start. It seems like that we spend a lot of our time focusing on issues outside ourselves rather than focusing on ourselves. We're looking for answers outside ourselves. So when we look towards, you mentioned before something, and I liked your introduction before. Thanks. I hope I live up to it. But you talked about saving the planet. There will be no saving the planet. We're not going to save the planet. We are a civilization in decline, we're probably a species in decline. But beyond that cheery first thought, what we maintain in this, now, and before we get going, I need to make two comments. One is that the topics we're talking about, the research that I'm doing, is funded by the National Science Foundation. And I also want to thank my son, Jesse, who is my central intellectual confidant on much of this. So I get to take all the credit today, but much of it goes to him.
Your son has a PhD in social psychology.
Yeah, from University of Virginia. So, and he works at JMU as well. So, getting back to the topic you were just talking about.
Tell me how I need to change and how that's going to affect
the
planet.
So it might not be going too far to say that all change starts with individual change. Okay, so we look outside ourselves to change things. We think about the environment, about you know, what we can do, how we can change the environment. But we really don't understand that biological system until we understand our own biological system, as one example, okay? So we're dealing with a system here, systems being, in short, everything's connected to everything else. A change in one factor produces an unpredictable or predictable change in other factors. So everything's connected to everything else. And I think sometimes we fail to see that change starts with us. It doesn't start in the community. It doesn't start on the global scale. It doesn't start in the environment. If we want to make changes, we make changes in ourselves first. Now, this is scary, of course, because that means you have to be accountable. It means you have to learn how to change. It means that you, scary as it may sound, that you're responsible for yourself. And I don't think that's a real popular thought these days, especially in Western society.
So my question was, what is me changing my personality have to do with saving the planet?
Well, a lot of people would benefit if you saved your personality, I understand. You changed your personality, from what I hear. Maybe that's a topic for a different show, but
Can you give me an example? You know, make some assumptions about me and tell me.
You're leaving yourself wide open on this.
That if I change these, how it might have a ripple effect that would be beneficial in the world around me.
Okay. How about this? Here's an example. How do we understand, let's say psychologically, how do we understand the world? Now, I have a better example. Okay. We teach at JMU and in most places, we teach courses like global economics or global environmental systems. Yet our students don't understand the principles of even their own yard or of being responsible to themselves for themselves economically. So we're teaching these major concepts that are infinitely complicated, yet we've not taught that same content on a much more personal level. So you're not going to understand the psychology of your community until you understand the psychology of your family. You're probably not going to understand your family that well until you understand yourself some. I think this is common sense. I don't claim that this is, remarkable insight. I think that we've put together some good information from other people and taken an angle on our own. But I think this is common sense.
Well, what I'm trying to get at, Eric, is if there's a specific example that you can follow the thread of for me. And, willing to embarrass myself completely, I'm asking you to pick on me. But if you'd rather pick on yourself, that's fine, too.
Okay.
Do you have an example of something that you've changed in your life? And by making that change, you think that it could very well have effects on the world around you?
Sure. Food is a good example. Okay. When I was in college, I decided to become vegetarian. Okay. About 15 years ago, I maintained that all through throughout my younger years. And of course, that gave me a different level of consciousness about food, how we produce it, why we produce it, how we waste it. And being conscious of that, being conscious of what I put in my own body, gave me some understanding of how food affects, let's say, the planet, how food affects the politics of food, the economics of food, in that matter. Does that work at all?
Yeah. So I understand that you made this change and a little bit maybe about why you made the change. Now, can you take that out to a further level for me of how this fits with your theory that in people changing their life choices and changing their very personalities, they can have an effect on the world around them?
Mm-hmm. I think we all have dreams. We all have desires as to who we would like to be, how we'd like to see ourselves. But the problem we have is actually changing. And like I mentioned to you before when we were talking, is that the area that we occupy in our research is that area between desire and fulfillment. It seems like we know where we are, we know where we'd like to be, but it's the process of getting there, really the step-by-step process of getting there that we're not good on. And that's where our research has been in the personality ped that you mentioned, which is a multi-source feedback platform, and which focuses on that cognitive dissonance that we feel when we realize that our values, our behaviors don't reflect our values. I'll get back to that in a minute. So tell me your question again.
Okay, before I do, there's a whole bunch of new people who've tuned in. And they don't have a clue what they're hearing.
Okay.
So I should mention that he teaches a course at James Madison University called Problem Solving in Science and Technology. He's co-developer of an online personal assessment tool called Personality Pad, as well as author of an article in the Journal of Sustainability Education that's titled Radical Premises in Sustainability Reform. Doctor of Education Eric Pappas is our guest. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. If you want to talk with Dr. Pappas, you can reach us at 888-WMRA-TALK. In all numbers, that translates to 888-967-2825. Let me ask a follow-up question to what you were just talking about. In this journal article, where I got the sense that you were purposefully trying to be as provocative as possible to get people thinking. This quote from the introduction, quote, "We are not willing or able to make the individual or collective sacrifices necessary to even attempt a reasonable level of sustainability. We may quite clearly simply be working to extend our presence on the planet by a few decades rather than to maintain indefinitely the quality of life we now experience. In short, we are in denial about our future, and we need to stop idolizing the future. End quote.
Okay. Well,
explain that to me.
We're really hooked on hope. And hope almost as a substitute for action. That if I hope that the environment's going to survive, or if I have a good attitude about it, maybe that's enough for me to consider myself an environmentalist. Maybe I don't really have to do anything. Okay? And what we're finding out is that we spend a lot of time hoping, we spend a lot of time thinking about things, but we don't do much. We talk about, look at our national health. Our national health is going downhill. Okay, I have a $1.3 trillion a year healthcare budget. Where are our dreams there of being healthier, more vital individuals? And so it seems like we're in denial about the fact that we are a civilization in decline. We are probably a species in decline. But we just really don't want to acknowledge it, nor do we want to do much about it. And that's where the change would start, by changing yourself. Where else would you start changing things? If you start changing things external to you, how legitimate a change is that?
Well, some people feel that if they're a part of an environmental activist organization and they're pushing their local, state, and federal lawmakers to change regulations having to do with the ecology and the environment and what kind of pollution can and cannot be released into the atmosphere, that's a good way of creating a sustainable environment. And I get the sense, Dr. Eric Pappas, that you think that kind of thinking is at least a little bit off target?
I think it's a little off target. I think it's good that people do it. I think it's great that people do it. And I've worked with environmental groups for a long time. I was part of organizing one of the first Earth Day celebrations in 1970. And what I noticed is that the environmental group on campus that I speak for sometimes, their objectives are the same ones we had in 1970. Since 1970, we've had a net loss in terms of environmental change, positive environmental change. That means we're losing the battle. That means maybe we're not doing something right.
Explain that to me. A net loss how, Eric?
Three things we have a huge problem with these days. We have unabated population growth, okay? And which is not slowing down, a tiny, tiny bit. It's not ready to turn around. We have we're running roughshod over our non-renewable natural resources and even some of our renewable natural resources. No change there. I mean, we're just getting worse and worse. And increased consumption per capita. All three things. There's no change in sight. It's not like, wow, hey, something's happening here. People aren't consuming as much, or the population is slowing down. Where are we going to go from here? These are facts. This isn't an opinion. This is an observation that this cannot continue. Yet we keep thinking and we're teaching people, oh, we can save the world just recycling, which doesn't count, by the way. And we can do all these things if you just think good, or if you forward a Facebook video, or if you call yourself an environmentalist. You're okay. That's it. That's enough. We're not doing anything. And so that's part of what I'm trying to address in my teaching. It's part of what I'm trying to address in my writing, being a, you know, lifelong social activist. It just comes sort of naturally.
One-time faculty member in the School of Engineering at Virginia Tech, but for a number of years now, an associate professor of integrated science and technology at James Madison University, Eric Pappas is our guest. His take on personal responsibility, even personality style, and sustainability is our focus. And I do believe Alex in Bridgewater is going to be our first person up on the phone line when we get back a bit more than 1 minute.
Just stop sleeping, buzzing on me.
41 years ago, Stevie Wonder first began singing about going for higher ground. Does that idea appeal to you? Got any thoughts on how that might look for you? On Facebook, we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Eric Pappas, faculty member in the Department of Integrated Science and Technology at James Madison University, is our guest. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Now to Bridgewater. Alex, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
Well, I'm a little puzzled by the whole premise of the discussion, in that I think it says more about Dr. Pappas's worldview and pessimism than it does about the actual facts of our sustainability, the sustainability of our society. And I'll take two areas of note for us to riff off of, or Dr. Pappas to riff off of. One is population. Since I was a child, we've been told that population was growing too rapidly and unsustainably, and this was going to be a problem. And at the time when I was a little kid, we were talking about 15 or 20 billion people as the projection. We're now talking about 9 or maybe 10 billion people as the peak population, with after the peak around 2050, the global population to be beginning to decline, because the fact is most women have fewer than 2 children in developed societies. And as more of the worlds become more developed, they have smaller families. The second aspect of our sustainability, and the most critical historically, is soil erosion. And I was told all through my childhood that the world was going to run out of topsoil and we wouldn't be able to feed ourselves. Well, not only has agricultural productivity continued to rise in a rather linear fashion, we've been able to keep up with world food needs using the same agricultural base as we had in 1960, but in fact, we've tackled soil erosion through modern farming practices. Of course, using the things that we did in the 60s, and 70s, such as contour plowing, but using things that environmentalists and sustainability activists told us we shouldn't use, like herbicides, which allow us to kill the weeds without these bare earth plowing methods, and we're building topsoil on our better acres. That's the biggest sustainability concern, and it's virtually been entirely solved. And I just wonder, are we really up against the sustainability cliff? Or is this just something that it's a lifelong mental habit?
Okay, Alex, thanks for your question. The first one about population, it's really hard to say. Population is going up. People predict, okay, after another 10 or 15 years, perhaps, maybe it'll go down. And that's sort of reminiscent of about 10 or 12 years ago when I heard on television and radio that we had seen the end of gasoline that was under $5 a gallon. I heard government economists saying, that's it. It will never be under $5 again. So now we have government people saying population's going to turn around and it's going to slow down. Maybe it will. Maybe it won't. Perhaps it's too late. The soil erosion issue, I know that, you know, we are feeding more people, but we haven't fed everybody yet. We're not even close. In fact, I would say I'm not even that sure that's the priority for the corporate world. You know, that we want to feed everybody. That we want to. I mean, Alex, there are so many really depressing factors in here. And I know your comment. You said before that pointing out some depressing things. I don't really think they're depressing. I don't feel like my life is depressing. I think this is just what's happening. And we need to understand it and do what we can to, as Tom had quoted me, extend our stay on the planet a few decades.
Alex, thanks for sharing your perspective. If I caught part of what Alex said at the beginning, Dr. Pappas, correctly, he said that he thought you were looking at things from a pessimist's point of view. And that reminds me of another line that I
caught. You're going to pick another pessimistic
article
line?
Well, I tried to underscore some of the key points in this article, Radical Premises in Sustainability
Certainly.
Reform.
Certainly, there's got to be something
optimistic.
One of them
was, quote, we are at the limits of expansion on literally all major global fronts, economic, environmental, social, and spiritual.
Right.
So tell me about any of that.
Economically, I don't think I need to tell anybody, especially in this country and overall. I mean, yes, are things getting a little better in China? Yes, I guess they are. But does it look like a turnaround? Are we better off? Are working class people, are the middle class better off here? No, we're not. And the end isn't in sight. And we're being told that things will be fine and we should just grin and bear it while our our corporate moguls go home with you know, millions and millions and billions of dollars. And that brings the idea of systems theory works in here, okay?
Well, explain what systems theory is.
Okay. In short, systems theory, everything's connected to everything else, and a change in one factor produces a change in the other. But I want to I'm going to change the topic, regardless of what you want.
Okay.
I want to, at least in some basic ways, explain to the audience what this idea of sustainable personality or systems theory is. Okay, so here it is. Normally, when we think about sustainability, people think environmentalism, okay, most often. When actually, at least in the literature these days, more and more, in sustainability is really social and cultural sustainability, economic sustainability, environmental sustainability, technical sustainability, and, as we've said, individual sustainability.
And you're going to help me understand what those
are. I am. If you just listen, I will. All these factors work together. You can't isolate the environment from economics. You can't isolate the environment from social policy, nor from the individual. So everything is tied together. Everything's dependent on each other. So all of these factors have to be concerned. If you're making an environmental change, you have to consider economic factors. You have to consider social and cultural factors. If you're an engineer, technical factors. If you're anybody, individual. So let me talk about one of those contexts, and that's the individual sustainability. Think of the same thing. Everything's connected to everything else. Okay, so who you are as an individual, how you function, whether you're happy or whatever, is based on these factors, a balance of these factors, physical, emotional, social, philosophical, and intellectual. All of these things go into making you the wonderful person you are. And a change in your physical component might produce an emotional or social or philosophical change. A change in an emotional factor we know has a dramatic effect on our physical bodies. So the point is this, and I'm trying to simplify for the sake of having only an hour here, is that when you're thinking of systems theory, that everything's dependent on each other, when we think of a sustainable personality is an individual who is balanced in these factors, physically, emotionally, socially, philosophically, and intellectually.
Give me an example of what that looks like.
Me. No, I'm just kidding. I think I'm enjoying my own humor so much. You know, when we bump into people who we see are high functioning, very often we can see that. We can see that they have a level of consciousness about who they are and a sense of understanding of who they are emotionally, socially, philosophically, etc. That there's an awareness on a regular basis of who they are in all these ways. And more than that, the idea is this, is based on being able to change intentionally. Okay, I'm getting the major factors of our research in here. Okay, so one of the foundations of sustainable personality, or if you want to call it individual sustainability, is the idea that we can change, we can improve intentionally, that we can set goals for ourselves and in a very measured, intentional fashion, make those changes that we see as being important to us, important to our communities, important to the planet. And you move closer and closer towards that, I guess, you know, an ideal version of yourself, something of that nature.
I was trying not to interrupt. I wasn't sure.
No, I was going to let you get a comment in
all
here.
All right. Well, actually, I want to get Jessica's comment. This is a question, I think, posted on our Facebook page. By the way, if you've just tuned in, Eric Pappas, faculty member in the Department of Integrated Science and Technology at James Madison University, is our guest. You can post to us on Facebook where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham.
And where Eric Pappas is making everybody feel bad this afternoon.
Jessica.
Is Jessica feeling bad?
I don't know. Here, okay. You judge.
Okay.
Quote, I recycle and I try to be careful about my carbon footprint. Is your guest trying to say that anybody who does these things is a good person, or even that I am a better person than people who do not do these things?
Okay. Jessica, thank you for doing those things. That's great. This is my planet and your planet. But I do have to say this. It's not enough. We are a planet in dire straits. We all need to be doing more. Beyond that fact of the politics related to recycling, which I don't want to get into, I'd rather stay on a more interesting topic. But the point is this, is that we all have to do more. We have to step it up. The house is on fire. If the house is on fire, everybody's got to be fighting it. So, and I promised myself I wouldn't spend most of this hour talking about how bad things were. But it's coming out that way.
We've got this from Chris on our Facebook page. I wonder if Dr. Pappas has reviewed the community-based social marketing ideas for fostering sustainable behavior by Dr. Doug Mackenzie Moore from Canada. I've tried some of his suggestions, using community gatekeepers of opinion, certain kinds of signage, etc., to get people just to recycle aluminum, with less than full success. It seems like there are anti-environmental mentalities out there. Perhaps this is the denial that Dr. Pappas is talking about?
Okay. I don't know the individual about whom you're talking. But, yeah, are there anti-environmental efforts? Yeah, I would say the corporate world, entirely anti-environmental. I mean, publicly they want to say, you know, we're in favor of this, and they spend a few bucks on it. But basically there's no consciousness there. There's no effort there to try to create some sort of harmony that would improve the environment, improve our socially, economically, and in other ways.
Thank you for that. We now go to Stanton for Richard's call. Richard, thanks for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for Eric Pappas, please.
Yes. Well, there are at least two problems with our current model of agriculture. It's very highly fertilizer intensive, and we are running out on this planet of phosphorus, which is a crucial element in fertilizer.
Thank you for mentioning that.
Yes. Now, and the other problem is that some of these sustainable, supposedly better methods that include no-till are being fostered by the genetically modified organisms. Finally, some independent research has been done that shows these products, corn and soybeans, interfere with the digestive system and reproductive systems in pigs and mice.
Great. Man after my own heart. Richard, again, thanks for the comment. And you're right. We have myriad problems with agriculture. And I would even, you know, say that we still have topsoil problems. We're still losing it. Central Africa is headed for a major food event with the loss of their topsoil, with them planting, not letting the ground lay fallow for a number of years. It's gone from 7 years to 5 years to 3 years. I mean, we're going to have food problems there. So, yes, that's certainly an issue, and it creates issues in other areas in sustainability. Economic policy, social policy as well.
Richard, thanks so much for your call. He teaches a course at James Madison University called Problem Solving in Science and Technology. He is co-developer of an online personal assessment tool that's called Personality Pad, as well as author of an article in the Journal of Sustainability Education that is titled Radical Premises in Sustainability Reform. Doctor of Education Eric Pappas is our guest. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Part two of this article, first paragraph. The first three radical premises are as follows. I'm quoting here.
Yeah.
Okay. One, you cannot eat more than your share. Two, you are responsible for everything you buy. And three, the possession of material wealth or political power does not confer the right to consume more than one share of the planet's natural resources or to control the fate of others. So it sounds to me like you're implying that there are at least three issues you want people to pay attention to that they can have some effect on in their own life, in their own choices,
right,
how they define their personality.
Yes, and the idea of radical premises in sustainability. There are 9 premises. I've written about 3 so far. These are the things people don't want to talk about, okay? And these are things I'm not sure I want to talk about either. But,
but you wrote about it, so it's fair for me to ask.
Yeah, well, right.
So you want to start with the first one. You cannot eat more than
you should. And that's the worst one. That's the hardest one. Okay, so here it is. And I want to be really just factual about this. We spend a tremendous amount of human, economic, petroleum-based, agricultural effort producing food that is really not much better for us than dog food. Okay, we produce massive amounts of fast food, sugar-laced food. And what we do, Tom, is we eat it. It gets us fat, we're unhealthy, and then we spend $1.3 trillion a year trying to undo being sick people. And that's a vast oversimplification, but I had to get through half the article in 2 sentences. So the idea is this, is that maybe a significant change, and this is an individual one too, maybe a significant change is maybe in the course of events on the planet, maybe we're going too far. Maybe we shouldn't have that quadruple big burger sandwich that's 2,100 calories and 3 days worth of fat and half a day's worth of sugar, because the planet can't afford it and we can't afford it. We can't afford to spend the money, eat that food that makes us sick and then costs money on the other end. Here's the point. We're wasting money on the front end producing food that's not good for us. We're wasting money on the other end trying to fix ourselves after we've eaten the food that's not good for us.
Okay, point number 2 here is you are responsible for everything you buy. And as you can tell from the music, we have to pause for a break.
Okay.
So we're going to give you a couple minutes to think about how you're going to expand on that idea.
Without getting myself in trouble.
Also, well, no, yeah, okay. You're perfectly welcome to get yourself in trouble if you want to.
Okay.
But also to you listening, if you have thoughts on anything you've heard so far, or this upcoming next point we're going to ask Dr. Pappas to expand on, that we are responsible for everything we buy. We do have phone lines open at 888-WMRA-TALK, but we have to pause for a break. As of 1988, Michael Jackson was telling us the most effective way to change the world for the better was to start with the man or woman we saw in the mirror. Got ideas on what changes you could make that could have a ripple effect on the world around you? Eric Pappas from the Department of Integrated Science and Technology at James Madison University is our guest. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. So let me get as practical as I can, Eric, with this second point in this article of yours. I'm responsible for everything I buy.
Right.
I need a new toaster.
Yeah.
And I take it that you are not implying that when I buy my new toaster, by responsible, you're just saying that I have to keep it clean and taken well care of.
That would be easy if only things were that easy.
Kind of responsible you're talking about.
I hope you do that. I do hope you take care of your new toaster as well. But being responsible for everything you buy means that being aware of the fact that the new cell phone you buy, the new computer, things we all buy, because we're consuming it, you are responsible for everything that's gone into it. And it's a very scary situation because, let's say, with electronics, basically, Most of everything that we buy, most of everything, Tom, that you and I are using was made by slaves. Materials that were mined also by people who were just short of slaves. And if that's okay.
You want to expand on that a little bit, because there are a few people who may have just gone, what did he say?
Okay.
Everything that I own was made by slaves?
Okay. Well, probably half the people in the world earn no more than a dollar a day for their work, okay? And this is all in the this referenced in the paper. But it's like the exposés on Apple and on cell phone production in China, where people are, living on site, where people are committing suicide, where people are making, probably as much as $12 or $13 a day for, that much work. People in other parts of the world who are making a dollar or two a day. People who sew all our clothes in Latin America or in the Far East, making, maybe a few dollars a week.
So part of what you're saying when you say I'm responsible for everything I buy is to know where it comes
yes.
from, who was involved
right.
in everything from the mining of the minerals to where it was manufactured or sewn, and whether or not everybody along the way was paid fairly. And if I
right.
can't do that, I don't buy it.
Well, that's hard to do, but there is a measure of,
yeah, but you're the one who said I'm responsible
right.
for everything I buy. So
right.
I'm trying to
okay, but I'm not being dualistic here. Okay?
Okay.
I'm not telling you should, step on your cell phone and, blow up your TV and stuff like that. Maybe we ought to be a little more measured in how we approach things. Maybe, I know this is revolutionary, but maybe you shouldn't get a new cell phone every 18 months. And I know yours is probably 18 years old, but, maybe that's not necessary. Maybe we don't need to consume and throw out quite as quickly as we have been. And everybody in the audience has heard this 100 times. I really want to talk about the third one.
Before you do that, though,
yeah.
Catherine's been waiting on
oh,
the
okay.
phone for a while.
Hi, Catherine.
Don't let me forget to get to the third one. But Catherine in Stanton, thanks for calling here on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment?
Yes, thank you for taking my
Eric
call.
Pappas.
Dr. Pappas, you had mentioned how the economy, we're talking about a much bigger scale than just environmental, and how the economy affects the environment. And my question for you is, and this is just my point of view, it seems to me that our economy has come to a place where it's not really about us, it's about me, what's good for me, as opposed to a real social economy good for everyone and everything. And I'd appreciate your input about that.
Yeah. In fact, thanks for the question. It's a good one. We are a people, at least in the Western world, who are, focus on unenlightened self-interest, I guess. We care about what happens with us. I was raised that way. Most of us were raised that way. We don't have the idea of collectivism, of maybe I should do what's best for everyone. Maybe what's best for everyone is also really good for me. Okay? And it's a simple concept. They understand it more in the East. But we seem not to be able to do that despite all of our efforts and all of the advertising in this direction and people working together and what we teach in kindergarten, which we rapidly forget over that summer between kindergarten and first grade. So I agree. You're exactly right. We're still a nation focused on individual well-being.
Catherine, thank you so very much for your call. So point three in this article, to quote it again, the possession of material wealth or political power does not confer the right to consume more than one share of the planet's natural resources or to control the fate of others.
Right. So, and I hope listeners aren't thinking, okay, this guy's a real bully. Okay, he's setting up these rules and regulations, what you're allowed to do, what you're not allowed to do. That's not it at all. I'm really talking about consciousness and sort of a collective approach. What should we do on this planet? What should we all do individually that moves towards greater collective well-being? So here's the one, and it's overstated a little bit on purpose, so it is controversial, of course. So here's a good example. Tiger Woods lives in a 33,000 square foot house by himself. No matter of that. But so Is he allowed to do that legally? Yes. And he has the money, so he's allowed to use all those resources to build the house, to air condition it, to heat it, to run the plumbing, to use all the water. We allow that. Can we, as a planet, afford that? Okay, and I'm not trying to get dualistic to say let's take all the houses away or no one can do that, but just this common sense. Are we really allowed? Do I have more human right than you, Tom? If I make more money than you, can I use more natural resources? Or are we really equal despite our income? That we really just get to use our share of natural resources and I don't get to waste them simply because I have a lot of money. That's the point.
How about, Eric Pappas, if I say I really don't care what you do and I don't care what Tiger Woods does, that I'm responsible for what I do and I can decide to spend a huge portion of my income and maybe beyond to get the biggest property I can or the nicest car for myself? Or I can decide to take something less in terms of amount of money or amount of resources necessary and devote some of what's left over to my choices about charitable organizations that I think are important. And if I focus on that and I don't spend a lot of time judging what you do or what Tiger Woods or anybody else does, it seems to me that then I might be more in consort with this theory I was reading of yours, Eric, about a sustainable personality, that I'm in charge of my choices. I'm not in charge of anybody else's.
And I think that a sustainable personality, that balance that we see in ourselves is a model for balance we would see on the planet, okay? That everything is in balance so that everything functions. Okay, across the planet, things are not in balance, so things are not functioning. So do you have the right to live how you want? You do have the legal right. And here's what I would say to you know, capitalists and other people who would really be detractors here, is that it's not working. Whatever we're doing is not working, okay? And even if you listen to nothing else about or agree with anything else I've said, I think very few people would disagree at this point to say what we're doing on this planet is working. It's working for a very small minority of people. But is it working for those of us who are the means of production, those are us regular people? It's not working.
One of the things that it's my understanding, Dr. Eric Pappas, that you do with your students, and it also is part of this online assessment tool that you help develop called Personality Pad, and there's a link to it on the Virginia Insight webpage.
Yeah, it's actually being repaired, so it's not going to
Okay, so
open.
The link will take you to a place that you'll have to wait
third iteration.
Get
excited
about
it.
But the link is still there.
Right.
Is you are helping people get a more accurate view of what their personality or what their personality style is. And your hope is, if I understand correctly, that as I get a more accurate sense of who I really am and how others perceive me, that then I'm more likely to change for the better. Did I get that?
Yeah.
Right. All right. Yeah. So explain how you do that.
So this multi-source feedback tool, which and listeners, listen carefully because this is a little complex, was designed by my son, Jesse, and it provides feedback on your personality. You take this personality test that we've come up with called Sustainable Personality, 57 questions, and you take it twice. The first time you take this, you take it for yourself, your real self, who you are. The second time you take it for your ideal self, who you would like to be. You know, so Tom is a person who really enjoys intellectual conversations. Tom is a person, you know, or I'm a person who enjoys close personal friendships, enjoy intellectual endeavors. Then, and
I score that on a continuum, like 1 to 5 or something?
Right, okay. Yeah, right. Likert scale 1 to 7. Now, I think the revolutionary thing that Jesse came up with was this idea of taking that the sustainable personality or other document, and you send that survey to 5 or 6 or 7 of your friends and family, and they take the survey for you. So this is multi-source feedback on your personality. 5 to 7 people anonymously are commenting on your personality.
So I send it out to these people, but right. when they reply, I don't know which one is saying
right.
what. Okay.
Right. So then you look at, we have these nice bar charts on the site and everything. So you look at it, maybe your ideal self as being a sensitive person. Maybe you consider yourself that you agree with that. Maybe your ideal self is that you strongly agree. You'd like to be more sensitive. But your friends and family say that you're a stone. There's some motivation. There's some cognitive dissonance of who you think you are and who your friends and family, people who love you, I hope. And we surveyed students as well to say, who do you believe more about your personality? Do you believe yourself or do you believe your friends and family? And about 73% of the students said they believe their friends and family about their personality before they believe themselves. So here's some motivation to say, okay, what can I do to, in this case, become a more sensitive individual? And that's where these classes come in, where we teach students basically the process of change. We teach intentional self-development, you know, a slow, measured approach, keeping track, well-organized, step-by-step approach to changing a part of their personality. And so far, I don't want to claim victory, but so far we've had some substantial successes. We've published at least 6 papers on it.
Can you give me some examples of what those steps might be?
Okay. First, when we have our students in my night class, which is called Individual Sustainability, we give them a model for a 12-week intentional change plan. So let's say you say you're motivated to want to start working out. Typically, people might say, okay, starting next week, I'm going to the gym 4 times a week and I'm going to do it for an hour, which means you'll make it about 2 days and something will happen. Instead, maybe people start out and say, well, I've never worked out before, so the first week, I'm going to take 2 15-minute walks. And maybe the second week, I'm going to take 20-minute walk and maybe I'm going to jog for 15 or 20 minutes. Maybe by the 4th week, I'm going to end up at the gym. Keeping track, okay? Staying true to your plan of you know, actually doing these things and letting this grow very slowly over a period of 12 weeks. Now, understand that we're really teaching process here. We want students to be successful in their projects, but we want to teach them the skills, the process skills on how to change, intentional self-development. Most all of our students at the end of it agree that their projects have been successful and they do have greater understanding and ability to be able to change themselves. So it's more complicated than that, but that's the radio version.
We've only got about 30 seconds, and I've been dying to ask you about something that I'm now going to have to ask you for a real shorthand version. The term spiritual and spirituality comes up any number of times in this article that I've been referencing. Why is that important?
Why is it? Because that's our philosophical and spiritual part. That's the foundation. That's the motivation. Those are the things that we hold dear. I'm not talking about religion here. These are the things that we hold dear that are the foundation of who we are and what we do.
I heard somebody once say that they define spiritual as sense of purpose in life.
Okay.
It sounds like you're talking about something similar.
Yes, I would agree.
Our guest has been Doctor of Education Eric Pappas, Associate Professor of Integrated Science and Technology at James Madison University, as well as co-developer of the online personal assessment tool called Personality Pad, and author of an article in the Journal of Sustainability Education titled Radical Premises in Sustainability Reform. Eric, thank you so very much for making time.
You're welcome. It's been great. Thanks, Tom.
Podcasts of this program are available on the Virginia Insight tab at WMRA.org. When you get to the page for today's broadcast, you will see links to more information about the work that Dr. Pappas is doing. Virginia Insight's executive producer is Matt Bingay. Dan Easley's our technical director. Associate producers Terry Ward and Bob Levicky. Some of our break music supplied by Robert Jospe and Inner Rhythm. Thanks for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.